Ramsey TV.
It is sometimes thought or supposed that God brings everything into being. God creates everything, but then once he has it created and he sets in motion the principles by which things operate, then he himself can, well, kind of sit back and put everything on autopilot, like the pilots in the 747s, 767s. The plane is flying on its own. They've put it on autopilot, and they relax, have a cup of coffee, read the newspaper, and maybe play some video games, and they don't have to do anything until the landing. And really, they don't have to do anything at the landing either. But some of them, they get bored, and they want to do something. After all, they spend all this money learning how to fly. So they take it off autopilot and land the plane. They don't have to, but they do, because it's fun to have control of things. This is Martin Zender here at MZTV. I wonder if God has put the universe on autopilot. Or I wonder if God likes to have control of things. Or I wonder if God, being who he is, everything and everywhere, I wonder if it's just his way to simply infuse everything. Since he's everywhere doing everything and all powerful, I wonder if he doesn't sit back and have to make a decision. Do I fly the plane or do I put it on autopilot? I don't know what to do. I'm kind of bored, so I'm going to control things for a while. Oh, but now I need a cup of coffee, so I'll just put it on autopilot and sit back for a while. Or is it that all things cohere and move and are activated on a molecular atomic level, because there is nothing in the universe that does not contain God? There is no energy in the universe that is not actively inspired by God. God doesn't sit back, take a coffee break. He doesn't put his recliner back and put the universe on autopilot. Well, I just thought I'd put all the laws in place and then take a coffee break. No, that is not God. And today I'm going to show you two verses from Scripture that show that not only does God create everything, but he carries everything on. In other words, he doesn't take a coffee break. I realize that he put the laws of physics into place. Of course, God put gravity into place. But having put gravity into place, does he then take a coffee break? Or is, because how can anything, any power, exist apart from God's direct management? It is supposed that, well, God is so powerful that he can create something, and then he created it so well that he doesn't have to mess with it anymore. He did such a good job building the earth and putting all the laws of physics into place that now he can take a really long coffee break. Why not just take a 80,000-year coffee break or something? But to even suppose this denies the omnipresence of God. If God steps back from his creation, then he's not omnipresent. How can he step back? How can he be omnipresent? How can he be everywhere and put something on autopilot? Something exists on its own, as if the power exists without the one who created the power, as if the creation exists without the creator. It's not enough to say, well, God created it. But the very concept of God then stepping back denies omniscience. Steps back from what? How does he step back? If he steps back from something, then he's not in the place that he just stepped back from. As if God can go back and forth. What? When he leaves, there's a void? What's filling the void while God is over here? This concept of God is the concept of a man. This is no more than imagining God to be a man, a pilot. or somebody who invents something that can go, like this fan. I can turn my fan on over here, and the fan just goes on its own. I don't have to do it anymore. Yeah, that's a man. That's me. I don't have to think about it once I turn the fan on. But the mistake is to think that God is like man. God is like human beings. Newsflash, he's not. Because he's everywhere doing everything. So the very argument should be moot, knowing who God is. Knowing that God is... there's nowhere God isn't. And so he's doing everything. He's doing everything. And the objection, of course, is human free will states that, well, God doesn't do everything. I mean, there are people who say they don't believe in human free will. Clay Kent was one of these guys. I debated him back in 1997 in Fairview, South Carolina. Some of you may have been at that debate. He insisted that, well, yeah, I don't believe in free will, but at the same time, humans have a little bit of free will. He kept saying that phrase, we have a little bit of free will. What is a little bit of free will? Well, it's a little bit of time where God isn't doing anything. It's a little bit of time. It's God taking a coffee break while you do something creative or something unique. And God comes back from his coffee break and says, ooh, look what they did. Oh, that's amazing. I wonder if I took another coffee break, a longer one, what they could do then. A little bit of free will. A certain amount, Clay Kent used to say. A certain amount of free will. And I kept asking him over and over again, where's the line? When does God doing things and when is God not doing things? When is God actively doing things? When is he just letting the ball roll? As if that's even possible. Well, he never could produce that line because there isn't a line. Because God operates all things in accord with the counsel of his will. God is operating, is operating, is operating. Ephesians 1:11. All things. I challenge somebody to modify that all things. God is operating all things in accord with the counsel of his own will. It doesn't say some things. And show me in the scripture where God takes coffee breaks. Show me in the scripture where God removes himself from his creation and does, we'll see what's going to happen. Doesn't. It's a denial of the very essence of God, which is hard for us to grasp. The omnipresence of it. And it's very hard for human beings to accept the fact that God is doing everything. Even my movements, God dictated ahead of time, and he's the one that's causing my mind, my brain to give a signal to my arm to move it. Am I doing that independently of God? How dare anyone make that assumption who claims to know God? Now the creature's operating on its own. In him we live and move and are, according to Paul, the apostle on Mars Hill. So let me give you these two. Well, I said there were two verses. Actually, there's a handful of verses from Genesis. You know them well. When the Spirit of God vibrates over the surface of the water, after he creates the heavens and the earth became a chaos and vacant. Darkness was over the surface of the abyss. The Spirit of Elohim vibrates over the surface of the waters. Elohim said, let light come to be, and light came to be. Verse 6, Elohim said, let an atmosphere come to be in the midst of the waters, that it may be separating waters from waters. And it came to be so. God speaks into existence. Everything. He spoke it into existence. It wasn't hard. He didn't have a workshop. Where's my hammer? Where's my saw? Where's my vice grips? He speaks it into existence and it comes into existence. But it's very tempting for some people to think that, well, of course, God sets the creation. He makes the physical creation. But when it comes to individuals, when it comes to human creativity, when it comes to human pizzazz, it can't be forced. Oh, but it is. Oh, but it is. Now I present you with Hebrews chapter 1, verse 3. Because most people, even Christians, will admit that God brought everything into existence. He's pretty good at creating the earth, the sun, the moon, the stars, speaks it into existence, makes a declaration. He just declares, let it be, and it came to be. Yeah, but it gets a little tricky for God. It gets a little tricky for him when it comes to human beings. Because now human beings have hearts and lungs and brains, and so they're moving around, and wow, look, they're doing dances, and they're writing poetry, and they're singing songs, and so, whoo, it looks like they're operating apart from an operator. But they're not. And here's why. Hebrews chapter 1, verse 3. But I'll get the whole context. I'll start with verse 1. Hebrews 1:1. By many portions and many modes of old, God speaking to the fathers in the prophets, in the last of these days, speaks to us in a Son, whom he appoints enjoyer of the allotment of all, through whom he also makes the eons, who, being the effulgence of his glory and emblem of his assumption, besides carrying on all by his powerful declaration, making a cleansing of sins, is seated at the right hand of the majesty in the heights, becoming so much better than the messengers, as he enjoys the allotment of a more excellent name than they. Let's go back to the key phrase. Carrying on all by his powerful declarations. And now we're speaking of the Son of God who carries on all by his powerful declarations. And we know that the Son, once God created his image, the Son, he does all things through him. All is out of God, 1 Corinthians 8:6, but all is through Christ. So God operates through Christ, and Christ is carrying on all by his powerful declarations. In both Genesis and in Hebrews, we have declarations. We have God speaking. In one case, it's the creation of beings. Things and beings. The earth, sun, stars, moon, these are things. I guess it's easier to see God creates that, but when it gets down to the animals, say, the camel over there looks like he's kind of crazy doing his own thing. Can't count on the camel to obey God's will. They're on their own. Armadillos. The Arctic tern. Yeah, got to watch those Arctic terns. Because the way they swoop and flit, they seem to be independent of God. They seem to be, if you're looking at it. There's no strings attached. Where's the strings? Don't need strings, because what you have is a God who inhabits the atomic particles, the DNA material, whatever that is, the life forces inside the human body that cause everything in the body to do what it does, the heart to beat apart from our consciousness, breathing apart from our consciousness, our white blood cells fighting viruses apart from our consciousness. All this stuff is happening apart from our consciousness. But suddenly, and we acknowledge, yeah, God's doing all that, sure. Well, God inhabits all that stuff, so I guess thank God for my heart, my lungs, and my white blood cells. But all of a sudden now, when we get outside the body and we get to conscious acts, suddenly we think there's a line where now we take over. Thank you very much. Thank you, heart. Thank you, white blood cells. Thank you, lungs. I can take it from here. I'm going to eat breakfast. And God doesn't care what I eat. God kind of likes taking a coffee break. Or in the afternoon, I'm going to paint a painting. And since this is a creative act, God made me to be, made me in his image, I'm going to make a painting. And I bet that I have some independence there, because God wouldn't cause a piece of art to come into existence by force, would he? Or is God operating in our minds, in our imagination, in our creativity? Is it all coming forth from a spirit? Is it all, what's it animated by? Willpower? Do you will yourself to be alive? Do you will the spirit to cause you to live? Do you will that to happen? You can will to lift your arm, but where's the will coming from? That's what I'm asking. Where's the actual determination? It doesn't come out of nowhere. Some people say that the universe came out of of nowhere. And many people who believe in God say, well, that's absurd. The universe didn't come out of nowhere. It came by an act of act. An act of act, yes. It's just as absurd to say that an idea you have or a thought you have came out of nowhere. It didn't come out of nowhere. The very thought to raise your hand came from somewhere. If you're going to claim it came from nowhere, and that's an independent act, then you're going to have to claim that, to be consistent, why wouldn't the creation of the universe be an independent act? Just some spontaneous combustion, like the pseudoscientists tell us, the Big Bang, that denies a creator. To me, you're also denying a creator and an act of God by saying that by some independent power source, you can will your hand up and down. The whole thing comes from God because there's nothing where God is. There's no place where God isn't. There's no place where God isn't. I'm pretty passionate about this because I can't stand this idea that there are some places where God isn't. There are some things God doesn't motivate and do. There are some influences that God doesn't bring. It's impossible if we understand the nature of God, and we do from the scriptures. Ephesians 1:11, God is operating all things in accord with the counsel of his own will. 2 Corinthians 5:18, all is of God. Romans 11:36, all is out of him, through him, and into him. It's not only out of him in that he creates the physical worlds and the human bodies, the bodies of the animals, but everything operates through him. And all things cohere in him. Colossians 1, somewhere around verse 17. All things cohere. And now we find out in Hebrews 1:3, that he carries on all by his declaration. So by the same word, the simple word, the spirit that comes out that creates things, that same spirit keeps things going. It carries them on. This is the opposite of putting the world on autopilot. It's the opposite of stepping back and seeing what's going to happen next. The opposite of that, complete opposite of that. It's a denial of God to say that there's any bit of independence from him. Because as I've told you many times, free will, I have no problem with the word will, because we will things all the time. I willed to move my arm up here. But where'd the will come from? Where'd the incentive to do that come from? Where'd the idea come from? It all came from God. Paul says, what do you have that you did not obtain? That is, what do you have? And I go back to Acts chapter 17. In him we live and move. Well, it's not just that you have it, it's the doing it also, and the carrying of it out, and the things cohering in him. It's not just create and run, it's create and carry it forward, and do it, operate it. The problem is, human beings don't feel it. We don't feel like we're being maneuvered and manipulated by God. Well, we don't feel our heart being manipulated by God either. That's a great example. I'm glad I thought of it. We acknowledge, yeah, that stuff goes on by God. Jeez, if God if the Spirit of God wasn't in me, animating this life thing in me, what's happening with my heart, huh? You might have two, I don't know, your heart, your blood vessels, and your lungs. If that wasn't in me, I'd be dead. Okay, just carry it through. Now go outside the body. It's not that big of a leap. It's just a little layer of skin. Now we're talking about your thoughts and your ideas and your motives and your determinations. These are also from God. But the problem is, you're aware of these. You're aware of these. So by being aware of them, you're under the delusion that you're in charge of them. You're not aware of the stuff inside your body, so I must not be in charge of that. But I'm aware that I'm lifting my arm, so I must be in charge of that. That's a delusion. That's a false line where God's control ends and your control begins. There's no line between where your freedom ends and God's control begins. There is no line. The whole thing is of God. Ooh, it reminds me of a scripture verse. Yes, 2 Corinthians 5:18, all is of God. And then when we get to relationships, it's assumed by some that if you are in a relationship, then it must be non-compulsory. Certainly a relationship has to be voluntary. Well, who said that? Who said why? Why does a relationship have to be voluntary? Why just because I love someone or because I love someone that has to be an independent act? Why? Why can't it be that God caused me to love someone? I don't understand where the discrepancy would be with a relationship. why would that be independent? I know why, because some people get tricked because it's an emotion. Because it's an emotion, and because people feel in control of their emotions, again, they assume that since they feel in control of it, that God's not causing every impulse to go toward another person and to love another person. You could say it roughly, like I do. It's like, God caused me to love that person. God did it. People hate the word control. God controlled the situation. Well, I sure as hell hope so, because the opposite of a God in control is the one who's not in control. How's that for doctrine? If you're not willing to say that God's in control of everything, including who I love, who I have relationships with, then you're going to have to say God's not in control. Let me hear you say it out loud. Look in a mirror and say it out loud. God is not in control of whatever you think he's not in control of. Say it. And if you don't believe God's responsible for everything, then say the opposite. Look in a mirror, stare at yourself, and say this. God is irresponsible. God is not in control and irresponsible. Do those sayings really fit the God that we, the God of Scripture that we know, that brought everything into existence by a declaration and keeps everything going, carries everything on every second of every day by a declaration? And if we're going to talk about relationships now, if we're going to say that, well, human relationships have to be free because we feel all lovey-dovey, then why not be consistent and carry that forward to God and say that, well, that has to be free too. In other words, God can't force me to love him, therefore free will is true. Because some people are willing to say that, well, of course God chooses us to be believers. We can't choose that. Well, by saying that, you're saying that God is actually forcing the relationship between him and us. So if you're going to be consistent, then why not say it of the human relationships? It's got to be the same way for both. But some people want to have their cake and eat it too. They want to have this freedom in the so-called human creative realm, the interactive realm. But then when it comes to God, they don't want to carry that over to God, because then they would have to say, well, I believe that humans are responsible for their own salvation, as Christians do. Christians believe that. And people who have gone farther in God and are more mature in God, they don't want to say that our salvation depends on ourselves. So they're very willing to say that, yeah, we can't not love God because God chose us beforehand. So it's kind of a forced love situation. And it goes against this idea that it has to be free in order to be real. Why does it have to be free in order to be real? It's real. God is still doing it, but it's very real to us because we're experiencing it. And we have that blessed bubble of ignorance where we don't know what's happening. We don't know what's going to happen. Some of us don't know what's happening either, but we don't know what's going to happen. So we're experiencing, we're learning, and we're enjoying it or not enjoying it as it's happening. But God is doing the whole thing. But that should comfort you, because he's a good God. And it may be strong to say that he's controlling everything and he's forcing everything to happen. I mean, I say that sometimes, and people say that sounds harsh. You sound very harsh, Martin, that God is controlling everything. God must be a control freak. He's not a control freak. He just controls everything. He can't help it. He's God. He infuses everything. There's no place where he isn't. So it just comes to him naturally. It comes to him naturally to carry on everything by his powerful declaration. It just comes naturally. He can't not do it. So you can be like me and just say, well, God controls things. I have no problem with that. I love being controlled by God. I love knowing that God's doing all that. I love it. Love it. Or you could say that God doesn't force. See, here's the big problem people have. Well, God, how can you say God forces people to love them? It's not a relationship. And on the human side, true. You can't force somebody to love you. Love me. Love me. Be with me. Marry me. You marry me no matter what. No, you can't. But why does that exclude God being involved in it? Why does that exclude God giving everybody their particular emotions in order to carry out his will? Why don't you understand where the inconsistency is? Why is that mutually exclusive? So instead of saying God controls everything, God makes people love him, you could say, well, God just makes himself irresistible. That sounds a little gentler, kinder way to say it. Well, God is just makes himself so irresistible to the people he called beforehand that they can't help but move toward him. What's the difference? What's the difference between God makes himself irresistible so that you can't resist and God grabbing you by the neck and pulling you in? It's the same outcome. It's the same process even. It's just different wording. It's semantics. He's still forcing you to do it by being irresistible. He's not mean in either case. Even if he pushed your neck, even if he grabbed you by the scruff of the neck, he would do it gently and lovingly like we grab a puppy. You can pick up a puppy by the scruff of the neck and you bring it to another puppy and you make them kiss. You love each other. Love each other, puppies. Love each other, puppies. What's the difference between that and making yourself irresistible? He's irresistible no matter what. He's irresistible whether he only goes with his irresistibility or if he grabs you by the scruff of your neck, makes you look at him and say, see how irresistible I am? And then pulls you in. So even if he's only irresistible and you go toward him because he's irresistible, it still stands that he's carrying on all by his powerful declaration and that your movement toward him is all coming from him because the impulse itself to go toward something irresistible is from him. You can't get out of this unless you want to bing, bing, bang, bang, bang on both sides of the fence. But you know me, I like to drive people off the fence. I've never had a fence on my property ever.